Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. If you want to be in touch with the program, text me 251-343-0106. We'll get to your text here throughout the course of the program. Coming up on the program still, Joy Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, our Wednesday regular. And John Wall, he's running for lieutenant governor. You may know him, formerly the Alabama Republican Party chairman. So we get the we're going to get through these candidates here in the next few days, and then you guys get to go vote on Tuesday. So that's sort of the plan ahead. Joining us now, the aforementioned Jared Hudson. He's a candidate for the United States Senate, one of the two in the Republican runoff on Tuesday. He's facing Barry Moore. Jared, good morning. How are you?
Doing good, brother. How you doing? Appreciate you having me on, Big Daddy.
Doing well. Thanks for coming on. Well, how's the campaign going?
Man, God's blessed us tremendously. Like I always say, he's paving a road and we're just walking down it. So I'm the most unlikely runoff Senate candidate ever. And the simple fact that I'm here is just a testament to what he's done and the people of Alabama, you know, and them, you know, talking about what they want, you know, wanting an outsider. So, I mean, we're blessed tremendously.
And he unseated a very tough, you know, the attorney general statewide office holder to get to where you are, and very successful campaign, I would say, starting from nothing. Have you had to do much different from last month's primary up until this point?
Well, no, it's pretty much the same game. You're just not, you know, it's 3 weeks, so everything's at a faster rate, right? So we're still just pushing the same game, which is bio, getting out, talking to people, letting them know who I am. This is the message. Now we have more people on our team. My wife is going to more places than she has in the past, and we have other team members that are speaking on my behalf. So we're trying to maybe fill the gap a little bit more, since we have so many places to be in such a short time to get there. You know, it's like Smokey and the Bandit right now.
Yeah, and you know, I guess you see the polls, and the polls are all over the place. But I would think you have a pretty good idea where the work needs to be done, and where you're going to do well, and then maybe where you can, you know, do a little more work to improve things.
Oh yeah, that's right. I mean, this for us, we're just trying to continue to maintain and grow what we have in North Central Alabama, spending some time in North Alabama, the economic engine that's Huntsville and everything churning up there, especially with me being a warfighter and all they do to support the warfighters. We're in Mobile the other day down at the economic engine that's in South Alabama that's churning to also support the warfighters, looking at what's, you know, hopefully going to be at some time a booming Navy town. But down there meeting with a lot of the people and leaders in Mobile and Baldwin County. And then, you know, today we're going to be down in the Wiregrass area, just meeting with folks, meeting with supporters, meeting with voters, and continue to spread our message and trying to earn the support of Alabamians.
Well, you know, let's move on to some issues here, and we'll just kind of talk news of the day right now. But, you know, the Iran situation and President Trump talking, and, it, you know, there may be more strikes, more aggressive approach going after power plants and bridges and infrastructure and things of that sort. You think this is what this has come to?
I mean, sadly, yes. I mean, they shot down one of our helos over the straits the other day. Praise God that none of the pilots or crew members were injured. But we definitely have to have a strong response to that. And, yeah, attacking their infrastructure on a country that's already starting to starve to death. They have water issues. They're storing oil in holes that they're digging because they can't get it out. You still have China. It's not a complete surround and starve them out like what we see in the old Roman times, where they surround the city, they starve it out, and then they go in and take the city over, because you have China that's connected and they're able to, via, you know, road and rail in some air, they're able to go in and out of Iran and support in that way. So we do know that's been taking place. So it makes it a little bit harder. There's a little bit longer bleed time to starve them out. But sadly, it looks like that's what we're going to have to do, because, again, they're not coming to the table on anything. And it's pretty simple. Iran, you can't have 60% enriched uranium. You can't have a nuclear weapon.
Well, and so do we achieve our objective by doing this? I mean, is it a game of trying to cripple this regime, or do we have some unintended consequence here? And you know, I don't know what it would be, but could Iran deteriorate into a state of chaos like a Libya, and then that becomes problematic as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say there's always a massive risk. Anytime you're involved in war, anytime you're involved in conflict like what we're involved in here, there's always a massive risk. The question is not what is the right answer. It's just what is the best answer when all answers are wrong. And that's where it's at. That's the problem with war. And the IRGC having a nuclear weapon, and they proved early on when everybody said they weren't going to be able to do it, when they cranked the shot over Diego Garcia, it was like, all right, this is a little bit more than what we thought. And so that's the one side, them having a nuclear weapon versus the cost, the inflation driver that war is, everything that we're dealing with right now with affordability, and can we tote another war? We're here because of 50 years of bad domestic or bad foreign policy. And the problem with foreign policy that led us to this point, if we would have dealt with this in 79, 80, 81, 82, 83, right? Beirut bombing where our Marines were killed. If we would have dealt with it then, we probably wouldn't have had the GWAT that I fought in, the global war on terror from 2001 to 2021 when Biden did the disastrous pullout in Afghanistan. So I think that that's what all of the powers that be are looking at. And they're trying to make the decision. Do we risk another GWAT 10 years down the road? Or do we deal with Iran now and risk another GWAT right now? And that's why we've got to elect people who are not neocons, who are not going to bend the knee to whether it's foreign allies, foreign adversaries, or even our own countrymen who oftentimes want to line their pockets just to send your kids to war. I know, because I was one of those kids.
Joined by Jared Hudson, candidate for United States Senate here in Alabama, here on the program. I had some questions that I was going to ask y'all, you and Congressman Moore, on Monday night. But let me just kind of roll through those. And this is the main one. When we talk about sort of the role of a United States senator for Alabama, and it's varied in the past. You've had the Richard Shelby types who would stay there and they would accrue the seniority, and they would get like a chairmanship on appropriations and steer, you know, the government money back to Alabama for, you know, whatever it may be, port of Mobile, roads, bridges, you know, military spending, et cetera. And then you had another sort of prototype, and then maybe this is the case with Tommy Tuberville and Jeff Sessions, if you will. We get kind of the ideological bulwark that, you know, you still do what you got to do for the state, but you also, you're the voice for these ideas, these important cultural issues, if you will. With Tuberville was abortion, with Jeff Sessions it was immigration, things of that nature. And, you know, even though you're swimming, you know, kind of against the stream there, you still were there, and you're still, you know, making this a point for to represent the viewpoint of the people in the state. Where do you see yourself on that kind of continuum?
Nah, man, that's a great question. So I think the biggest thing is understanding how to actually get the mission done, which is elevating the Christian conservative voice of Alabamians, but also doing it in a way that doesn't sacrifice, you know, our economy and our way of life. I mean, when you look at us, we've got an average income of $65,000, $67,000 a year across the state of Alabama. I'd say $67,000 annually would be on the high end, but across the state, and that means people have to work two or three jobs. So you mentioned abortion, and this is a great example. My wife and I visited a pregnancy clinic in Hansville. It's a Christian-based pregnancy clinic, and they said the number one reason that young ladies come in, whether they're married, whether they have a boyfriend, whether they're don't have anybody and they live with their parents, whatever it is, the number one reason they come in to have an abortion is because they feel like they cannot afford to take care of the child, or somebody in their life, parents, husband, boyfriend, whoever, is telling them they have to have an abortion because they cannot take care of the child because of affordability issues. Now, I believe that life begins at conception, right? The right to life, just like what Coach fought for when he was fighting for no DOD abortions, right, years ago. With that being said, we have got to make sure that, one, we fight for that, right? Life is of the utmost importance. But two, let's make choosing life easier, right? Now, this is anecdotal. This is just one lady that runs a pregnancy clinic telling us what she sees on the ground. that's one of the biggest things that we have to be sure that we recognize is what is happening on the ground is reality. That's what we feel. And if you want to deal with a pro-life issue, you got to make life affordable so that choosing life is easier. And it's almost hard saying that because choosing life should be easy. We should be able to do that with the snap of a finger, no problem. However, if you're not the one suffering in poverty, it might look different. If you're not getting kicked out of your parents' house because you're pregnant out of wedlock here in the state of Alabama, it might look different. We've got to make sure choosing life is easy. How do we do that? We deliver economically for the state of Alabama. I've seen as a law enforcement officer, you elevate people out of their poverty and you start to decrease crime and decrease criminal enterprise and decrease some of the issues we're seeing. So bring back investment. And it's not giving a man a fish. That's the SNAP benefits program. That is the federal government incentivizing people to have abortions, create criminal enterprise, and do all of these things that we don't agree with as Alabamians. Cut off the SNAP benefits, cut off these ridiculous things that cause waste, fraud, and abuse to the point that they can't, that nobody wants to work, and start allowing the people that truly need and have it, but it's a hand up, not a handout, and making sure that we get people back to work, we get our workforce going, we get our workforce educated for the jobs we have coming in, and then companies want to come in and invest. We do that by bringing in dollars, taking them away from the $40 million that goes to the Taliban or Minnesota Somali immigrant communities and investing in our infrastructure in our state so that businesses, so that the national security nexus that we uphold, they want to invest. They want to invest in our workforce and our people. And guess what? As Alabama becomes the shining light in the United States of America, it elevates our Christian conservative voice on the national stage. So it's not one or the other. It's both and. And that's one of the biggest issues we see. You've got one side that wants to howl at the moon, and you got the other side that wants to use the government for everything. It's not either or. It's both and. The government, the federal government's in place for three things: protect the constitutional rights of the citizens, their God-given rights, the government's supposed to make sure they're upheld. Well, secondly, maintain a free and fair market. And then number three, invest in our infrastructure and the national security issues of that exist. And when the federal government does those three things and does them well, they don't have to be involved in all of the other things. And it makes our voice louder on the national stage with pro-life issues, right? Which shouldn't even be an issue we're talking about, but that just happens to be where we're at nowadays.
Well, let me ask you kind of an extension of that question, because there's a lot of debts, deficit talk out there. And how do you straddle that line where, yes, you want to make sure that Alabama, you know, we pay taxes, that the taxes are coming back to Alabama in a productive way. But on the other hand, we got, you know, trillions of debt, and we run this deficit every year. It's the same old, and we talk a lot about it. Where do you find the right approach there?
Yeah, so go back to that war thing. It's not going to be what is the true right answer. It's just what's the best of two wrong answers, because we're not sitting here because of decisions that I made or you made. We're sitting here because of decisions that happened over the last 50, 60, 70 years that led to bad immigration policies, both illegal immigration and legal immigration policies that have abused the taxpayers of our country. We're sitting here because of bad foreign policies that have forced us into wars that we shouldn't have been fighting in for 20 some odd years, the duration of my adult life, that increased unbelievable inflation through quantitative easing, right? So you got the printing of money, you got the housing market that is completely disastrous right now with families not being able to afford housing. So it's not that there's one smoking gun that's going to cut the deficit or balance the books. It's making a bunch of these incremental adjustments so that we don't totally sink the ship, but at the same time, we're building the ship up and keeping it afloat so that our kids one day can have better opportunities than we have. The way you can do that with a deficit, and there's a bunch of different ideas that are talked about. People have talked about equitizing our natural resources. That would be something you could look at and think about. You know, there's been some that have talked about it. You could talk about just unleashing American energy. How about we don't live on this executive order four-year rotation like we see in the Biden administration, when you have a lot of investment in LNG pipelines, coal, fossil fuel, all that, and then all of a sudden he does an executive order through the auto pen that changes it. So now you've got millions of dollars investment on the front end that all halts. And then it starts back up under the new Trump administration, right? It starts back up, and now you got to start over again. And it just costs money. This stop and go costs money. That's why you need legislators codifying those good executive orders. I'll give you one good example, and doing away with the bad ones. One good example is when President Trump pushed the executive order to keep corporations and even foreign entities from buying single-family homes, right? Do you remember that? Just a couple months ago, he pushed that executive order, making sure that we codify legislation like that that protects the supply and demand of our housing market would deal with the number one driver of inflation, and that would impact families. Putting those things in place help what the deficit feels like. It doesn't help the deficit so much on the front end, but it eases the burden on the families that are feeling the noose tightening around their neck because of inflation and overall cost of living. Then making sure that we continue to do things like cut waste, fraud, and abuse through SNAP benefits, through subsidizing health care through illegal immigrants, through sending $40 million a week to the Taliban through the UN, to sending stuff into sub-Saharan Africa. We continue to cut those things like we saw during DOGE that don't uphold and positively support the American people.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this, and you brought it up, but your opponent, Barry Moore, and his military record, do you believe that Barry Moore is a veteran?
You cut out one time. I heard you. Do I do what now?
Do you believe that Barry Moore is a veteran?
No, I have no idea. I mean, he said he was. I mean, like I said it in an interview somebody asked me the other day. He said that I had three mailers come to my house that said veteran on it for Barry Moore. I'm his opponent, and they're still sending mailers to my house. The biggest thing is he just needs to put his stuff out there. Like for me, for the last year, I've weathered the same storm that he's dealing with now about questions of my resume, because I put it out there. This is who I am. I'm a Christian. I'm a conservative. I'm a Republican. I'm a seventh generation Alabama family man. I'm a warfighter, SEAL sniper, law enforcement officer. And I've had to put it out there. I mean, even my sheriff had to go and say, no, he is an investigator with us. What are y'all talking about? I had to put my DD-214 out there because he had some Kamala Harris word salad one day at something that people were running around online about a simple yes or no, are you a veteran? And he says something else, and then people are like, well, is Jared Hudson even a veteran? So I'm like, you got to be kidding me. They're running $5 million worth of negative ads on me, calling me a rhino, a Democrat, everything under the sun that's not true. And now I've got to deal with whether or not people on Facebook are questioning my veteran status. I mean, we shouldn't be here right now. I have to take everything I can with a grain of salt. But at the same time, I've got to show that my resume is true. And then when he gets questioned on it, they hit news outlets with lawsuits. I think that is the biggest issue, because they ran an article. Somebody ran an article and said, we didn't even know about this.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we get a lawsuit letter. That is the craziest thing to me. And then now he says something where Jared Hudson is victimizing him in some way. I haven't said anything about the dude stuff. I've said, this is mine. Barry needs to show his, and we need to debate the issues that are important to Alabama, which is affordability, security, and putting Alabama first, which is making sure we elect a representative we can trust. But the problem is it's still convoluted. I don't know how to answer that question. Ask Barry. Get him to answer that question, because he's the one who has claimed it. He should answer it. Jared, as far as I go.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we're way along here. I was like, take an opportunity here to tell your folks how to find out more about your campaign, and we got to get out of here.
HudsonForAlabama.com. Would love to earn your trust and support. Like, share, and follow. Get out and vote on June 16th. It's the most important thing you can do. Jeff, thanks for having me, brother.
Thanks for making time for us there. Jared Hudson, ladies and gentlemen, running for United States Senate. We'll be right back. It's FM Talk 106.5.